You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter. We tied branches to our helmets. We painted our faces and rifles with mud from a riverbank. Blades of grass hung from the pockets of our tiger suits. We wove ourselves into the terrain, content to be a hummingbird's target. We hugged bamboo and leaned against a breeze off the river, slow-dragging with ghosts from Saigon to Bangkok, with women left in doorways reaching in from America. We aimed at dark-hearted songbirds. In our way station of shadows, rock apes tried to blow our cover, throwing stones at the sunset. Chameleons crawled our spines, changing from day to night, green to gold, gold to black. But we waited till the moon touched metal, till something almost broke inside us. VC struggled with the hillside like black silk wrestling iron through grass. We weren't there. The river ran through our bones. Small animals took refuge against our bodies. We held our breath, ready to spring the L-shaped ambush as a world revolved under each man's eyelid.
He's Scott Winter.
And she's Stacy Waite. And that poem you just heard is, of course, one of Yusuf Komunyakaa's widely known poems, Camouflaging the Chimera, published by the Wesleyan University Press, about his time as a soldier in Vietnam.
In an interview, Komunyakaa said, "It took me 14 years to write poems about Vietnam. I'd never thought about writing it, and in a way, I'd been systematically writing around it."
The three writers on our show today wrote their pieces while they were in the thick of war or soon thereafter. We have two poets on the show today who served in Iraq, Brian Turner and Jennifer Pornell, and Elliot Woods, a multimedia journalist.
Jennifer Pornell is assistant professor in the Environment and Sustainability Program at the University of South Carolina and the author of the book Excavations, A City Cycle, which was the winner of the South Carolina Poetry Initiative Book Prize.
Jennifer talked to us by phone from South Carolina about how poetry can articulate what can't be explained when it comes to the soldier experience.
Poetry is especially adept, especially useful at helping articulate feelings that are, and experiences that are both intense and unknowable. There's no way to share an actual experience of any kind. War experience, combat experience, or just even a soldier's experience is something that everyone who's ever had it describes as being intense and intensely shared and only understandable by fellow comrades. I think the only way to bridge that kind of experience to people who have not shared it is perhaps through a medium like poetry that can evoke many related feelings, emotions, thoughts, intensities of experience that other people can relate to.
After serving as a combat engineer in Iraq from 2004 to 2005 with the Virginia Army National Guard, Elliot Woods completed his undergraduate studies at University of Virginia. He began covering Afghanistan in October 2009, and his mixed media project, Assignment Afghanistan, which you can find at assignmentafghanistan.org, won the 2011 Ellie from the American Society of Magazine Editors for Best Multimedia Package.
Air Schooner correspondent Ryan Oberhelman interviewed Woods in our Air Schooner studios, and he asked him about Assignment Afghanistan.
From the very beginning, when I started doing journalistic things, I knew that I wanted to work across various media. I bought a camera at the same time as I started writing my first story and bought an audio recorder. And when I published my first nonfiction story, I had video clips of all of the primary subjects embedded in the story in the online version. So I was always thinking about how to use different media to show different sides of the story, to attract different types of viewers who might not read a 7,000-word story but would watch a 3 to 5 minute interview clip with one of the subjects. So it was something I was always thinking about, but I spent 3 months in Afghanistan in the summer of 2010. Out of that summer, I think I only published 2 stories, and I was pulling my hair out several months after I returned home because all of this stuff was just sitting on my hard drive, really strong material that had come at a great cost to all of the people who are represented in it. It was also especially exciting for me because as a young journalist who has skills in various media, this was an attempt for me to say, hey, one guy with a backpack full of gear can do all this stuff.
Some of the most powerful moments in Ryan Oberhelman's interview with Elliot Woods are when Woods talks about the American public's striking lack of attention to the wars we're engaged in overseas, and about the mainstream media's at times troubling relationship to the wars they cover and the soldiers they represent in that coverage.
In the United States, what's most alarming to me is the decadence side by side with an incredible amount of apathy and what appears to me as willful ignorance, as people truly wanting not to know what's happening in their own country or outside of our borders. So that to me is extremely alarming. And if you're a scholar of history at all, then you know that periods of great public apathy are often periods that precede great catastrophe. A massive campaign of predator drone strikes in Pakistan can escape media coverage, that thousands of young men can be sent to die in a place like Iraq or Afghanistan, and that those wars occupy 2% of media coverage in the last couple of years. Now that to me is just astounding. When you look at especially broadcast media, you have two poles, CNN and Fox News, or MSNBC and Fox News, and military personnel are as aware of that politicized media landscape as anybody else is. In the last year, we've had lots of media attention given to soldiers urinating on dead Taliban corpses, to soldiers flying Nazi flags, to soldiers stealing money from the pockets of Afghan villagers, all sorts of different things. And I'm not suggesting that those stories shouldn't be reported, but it seems like those stories get a lot more attention than the day-to-day grind of the military effort in Afghanistan, and soldiers and Marines are keenly aware of that. So I think they're just suspicious of the motives of reporters who come to embed with them, and they're very aware that those reporters and those photographers are often looking for the bloodiest, most dramatic moments and overlooking some of the more commonplace moments that tell perhaps a more important story.
Writer and veteran Brian Turner sat down with Stacy to talk about his work in the Air Schooner Studios, and his poems tell us some more about the perhaps more important story Woods mentions there, the story of what it's like for actual soldiers in their day-to-day lives.
My problem with most histories is that they're usually from the top down. They're from the generals and the colonels. In terms of war histories and military history, it's always the Schwarzkopfs and the Petraeus and people like that. They're so high up, they're looking at maps and troop concentrations, and they're considering delegations. And Friday afternoon, they have to fly in their jet to go to Geneva or to Washington to have a conference, or they have a teleconference with someone. But they're not often eating MREs down in some side corner street. But they've taken some of the M&Ms and they stuffed it in their side pocket, or some peanut butter that's in a little plastic tube. And then they're walking down the street and they're really hungry because they haven't eaten. They realize they forgot they haven't eaten and they're kind of shaky. And they're walking down the street with the dogs barking at them. It's dusty, or they're in an orchard. They don't know how long the day is going to be, and they're eating this peanut butter out of a tube. And that just doesn't get written down. That's the actual war. You know, for now, in terms of my own personal experience, I feel like I used to call myself like an embedded poet, almost like an embedded reporter. I thought, well, if I could be anything, maybe I need to write poems from this place to add to the overall vision of the space. But I think, you know, 10 or 15 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, when the children in Iraq and Afghanistan, when they've grown up enough and their poems have been created and maybe translated, and then shared with us, maybe then we'll learn something about the war that we've been a part of.
I think Turner has invented a new term, the embedded poet. And in that sense, while he and Woods are working as different kinds of writers in different genres of writing and for different audiences, the connection seems really clear.
When Brian Turner was here in the studio, I did get the sense that he was not afraid of sort of blurring the genre lines, though he did talk about journalism and what he perceives as the difference between journalism and poetry.
I figured that one thing that poets try to do that journalists often try to do the opposite of is that we lean into the emotional domain. And the journalist oftentimes tries to lean back from that. and allow the space to reverberate if it does for someone. But I think it's part of the poet's job is to see what is the human in the moment.
Brian Turner served 7 years in the U.S. Army, and his poetry has been published in Poetry Daily, the Georgia Review, and in the Voices in Wartime anthology. Turner was also featured in Operation Homecoming, a documentary that explores the firsthand accounts of American servicemen and women through their own words.
Turner earned an MFA from the University of Oregon and is the author of 2 poetry collections, Phantom Noise and Hear Bullet. During my interview with him, Brian read me a poem from this widely acclaimed collection. The poem is called Ferris Wheel.
A helicopter went down in the river last night, hitting a power line slung a few feet off the water. They were searching for survivors and bodies from a boat capsized earlier, Americans and Iraqis both. It's dawn now, and the sky drifts low and flat and cold, the way search boats on the Tigris drift further and further downriver. When Navy divers bring up the body of an Iraqi policeman, it will be a man we aren't searching for, and still another later in the day, a college student from Kirkuk. It will be a long week of searching like this, every morning near the shoreline restaurant, where open fires are fed kindling and tender, a cook's hands lifting the silver bodies of fish, weighing them on scales. The history books will get it wrong. There will be nothing written about the island Ferris wheel frozen by rust like a broken clock, or about the pilot floating unconscious downriver, sparks fading above as his friend swam toward him instead of the shore, how both would drown in this cold, unstoppable river.
For me, one of the really striking things about Brian's work was how much Iraqi history informs his poems. And when I asked Brian about this, here's what he told me.
So during that period, there was 2 different wars that I might be going to. And I don't know which one, Afghanistan or Iraq. Completely different cultures and people and history. So I was reading up on both of them because, you know, I knew this could be the place where I might die or my life might be changed. How would it not, you know? But I was thinking in my mind, this could be a life-changing place. And of course, it ended up being that. It seems to me really imperative that if you're going to go somewhere where you might give your last breath, that you should know where you're going.
Brian really, I mean, he's not afraid to implicate himself and through that implicate people around them so we can really understand, you know, how we're connected to what's going on in places that seem very far away because of the kind of media representations Woods talks about. And Brian, talk to me a little bit about that issue of self-implication or complicity.
I find that it's easiest for me to think about what's wrong in the world when I find complicity within myself. So the poems become kind of an investigation toward that. And then if I share those, if I'm able, as the I, whatever that is in the poem, to discover some type of complicity, maybe the reader might recognize some of that in their own, a portion of that in their own life.
Honestly, Scott, I really wish we could get our show today on some kind of major news network because I think what all of these writer soldiers have to tell us about the stories they've lived and witnessed is something the country really needs to hear and pay attention to.
And the world needs to hear Jennifer Pornell's poem, Baghdad, When a Church is Bombed, which she wrote as a reflection after 4 churches were attacked in Baghdad, one of which held some of her friends. We'll close with this slice of this poem, which you'll be able to hear in its entirety later this year in an Air Schooner reading series. Thanks for listening.
There's a city within the city, and where the city lives, we live, and eat, and sing, and drink, and laugh, and love, and war, and cry. We tender oceanic nets, imagining like kelp beds that we feel the movement of the spheres. So now, built up from all that was, we are like commentary tales that come from planetary depths long gone.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from James Redd, Ted Wheeler, and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.